Everybody heard what happened in 770 in Chabad-Lubavitch headquarters this week. It was a whole story of pain, and where it's frustrating, and actually more than frustrating. And it's really it's embarrassing that such a thing happened. But I want to share with you the story about 770, about this building, the history of the building, where it started, how the red brick building became the headquarters of Chabad-Lubavitch movement. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, came to America in 1940, and in February 19, 1940, 84 years ago, almost 84 years ago. He was caught on August 1st, 1939. He was in Poland, in Warsaw, when the war broke out. He was at that time already on a wheelchair. He was paralyzed, and they had to save him from one shelter to the other. It was terrible. Chabad, the few Chabad Hasidim who were in America, turned over the world, literally turned over the world to save him. American government, they saved them from the war, and they arrived in America in February 1940. On the port, he came on a boat. On the port, there were thousands of people came to greet him, and it was a little ceremony, almost like a welcoming party, or if you call it press conference. And then they took him and the whole entourage, his family and his secretaries. They went all to Manhattan to hotel. In the hotel, he made another little party event, and he announced there that he's going to open a yeshiva in America, just like in Europe. And he coined the statement, the line, the if you want, the mission statement: America is no different. And therefore, if you can be have Hasidic Jews in Russia, in Poland, in Russia, you can have them in America too. Because people at that time used to say, America is different. You can't have it in America. Listen. The same night, later he wrote in his diary like this: the same night, two of the most closest supporters of the previous Rebbe entered to his room. You know, he did not have too many supporters in America. For sure, not guys who were, these were American citizens for many years who did well. And they basically saved them from Europe with their money. Told them, Rebbe, we heard that you're at the event that you were planning to open a yeshiva. We came to tell you it's in what's going on. We want to tell you what's going on in America. The spiritual life in America, the state of Judaism in America is very low. And I want to tell you, we want to tell you that your plans to establish a yeshiva here in the United States, like in Europe, it's not going to be successful. You'll not be successful. And we want to save you from embarrassment, from a colossalic, a catastrophe. We want to save you from a disaster. They told them America, as the nature of the American people, is to get excited very quick and they cool off very quick. Then yeah, people told, we'll go for 5 minutes. Many rabbis came to America, they continued to tell them, and they were welcomed with great excitement. And a short time later, they faded out, and these great people were left out in the cold, and nobody even cares for them. We want to give you a picture of the situation. You should know what you're going for. Then he writes, and he concludes in his diary. The same night, you know, before you go to sleep, you say the Shema. Saying the Shema is not just a time, just not we say the Shema and we go. It's more a time of reflection, reflecting on your day. How was your day? Said he was thinking about his day and what this two his best friend told him. That's his best friend. That's his biggest supporters who love him. And he had he said tears went down his face when he was reading. That was on the first night that he said the Shema on the soil of the United States of America, the promised land, the land of opportunity. The next, in a week, they established a yeshiva with 10 boys. In a week. In a synagogue in Borough Park, I think. That's how the Chabad yeshiva started in America. Meanwhile, the Rebbe was in Manhattan in a hotel. I think it's called Greystone Hotel, something like this, Greystone Hotel. In any case, and for Pesach, he was invited by some important Jew. He gave him the house in Lakewood, New Jersey. At that time, Lakewood was like a vacation town. You go there for the summer or for whatever it is. And somebody had a second house, and he gave it to the Rebbe for Pesach. Then you know the Hasidim said, "Maybe Rebbe, maybe stay here. We'll buy a building here. You're such a nice place." At that time, he was in a wheelchair. He was sick. And the yeshiva will come here, it will be nice. Rebbe said, I want to live with my people. He meant to say, I want to be in the city with all the Jews there. After Pesach, he went back to Manhattan to the hotel and they started to look for a building to buy for the Rebbe. To buy for Chabad. He needs a bar house to live, he needs a synagogue. He needs Chabad to be was replanted to the United States of America, where the Rebbe is there with Chabad is. They looked and looked, they found a building on 770 Eastern Parkway. The building was built in 1933. It was the newest building on the street in the community. Just built it. We're talking about 94. It was 7 years ago before that was built. A beautiful building, three floors, with an elevator inside. It was unheard of in a private house to be an elevator at that time. In 1933, 94, you're talking about. And it was perfect for him because he was paralyzed. You understand? That's why it was so perfect. And not only and the price was unbelievable. It cost this who lived there before, a Jewish doctor who was performing at that time abortions was not legal. And he was performing abortions there. And I think he got in trouble with the law in Texas. And the bank took away from him the building. And the bank, they say that he invested in the building then, probably $200,000 in 1933. The bank was selling, I don't know, maybe it's a little too much, but that's what they write in the books. And the bank was selling it for $30,000. It was a gold mine. Chabad bought the building. They gave a down payment of $5,000, and the other $25,000 they took out a mortgage for 20 years. In before the high holidays of 1940, the Rebbe moved to the building inside the building, and he opened the shul in the first floor. This is the original building I'm talking about, not the extension to the building. You were ever in 770? Not yet.
No, I've never been inside.
We'll take you there one day. Then, but I'm talking about the original building. When you see in all the pictures, the original building, and the yeshiva moved there too. But you know, not everything goes so easy. The year that Chabad is moving, a Hasidic Rebbe is moving to the community. Many Jews didn't like it. You know, at that time, it was a very affluent Jewish community. Crown Heights. And the conservative movement, the biggest center of the conservative movement in America, was across the street of 770. Now it's a Chabad building, by the way. But at that time, it was a big, and the Jews didn't need this Hasidic rabbi there to run to. Here goes the neighborhood, you know? Who needs it? That some people started to collect petitions. A complaint to the city not to allow them to buy the building. Then a guy was going around from office to office and asking people to sign a petition. He walked into a doctor of his friend and told them, "I want you to sign this petition." By the doctor was sitting another Jew and hear the conversation that this guy's collecting petitions to sign signatures to try to petition against the Lubavitcher Rebbe coming to live in Karl Heinz. Says, you're trying to fight with a Jew who was in Russia, fighting the Russian government, was in jail to save Judaism, then was in the Holocaust, barely survived, paralyzed on a wheelchair, and you don't want him to come to live here. He pulled out the whole pack of the, he told, show me this. He took the whole package of the all the bunch of papers with the signatures, he tore them apart, and he threw it away. That was the end of it. By the Rebbe, the building of 770, because it was his father-in-law's building, it was very precious to him. It was once an idea to expand the synagogue. It's a very small synagogue there, upstairs, the original synagogue, very small. And the Rebbe became Rebbe, and people came to the event. It was no place for anything. And they wanted to expand it. And the Rebbe said, "Don't move a stone in this building. Here, don't move a brick in this building. That exactly should be the way it is. Don't touch it." Once, when they decided to build in the backyard, they built a sukkah. The Rebbe said, "You can do it with the condition that you don't eat a nail in the building." And when he came to see the sukkah and he saw that they put nails, he was very upset. They hit nails in the building, he was very upset. You know, in the then came the late 60s and the early 70s. The community, the demographics in the community changed. And it was, you know, they built the projects, the city of New York built the projects, and it became a place with, who was plagued with a lot of violence and crime. And it was not a safe place to live anymore. And the Jews started to run away, you know, they just do it. They run away from the community like from fire. And I sell, and my neighbor sells, and the third neighbor sells, and other things as well. And the prices of the houses goes down and down and down.
And then you wind up in Solon.
Then the Rebbe was the only one who said, the only leader. There were many Hasidic leaders at that time in the late 60s, and rabbis and other communities. The Rebbe says, "I'm not moving from here. If my father-in-law lived in this building for 10 years, this is going, I'm staying here. Anybody wants to." And then the Rebbe also said that halachically you're not allowed to do it because who runs away? The people can afford it, right? They can afford take the loss of the house and then go somewhere else. The poor people, the widows, the old widows who are living by themselves in the house, the people have a bakery and a fish store and a this store and they make them living from the community. What's going to be with them? The Rebbe said, "You're not allowed to live." And the Rebbe stayed. And the Rebbe encouraged people to buy houses in Karl Heinz. My father-in-law, Rabbi Alefsky, bought a house in Karl Heinz in, I think, the late 60s for $26,000. This house cost today, is bought today. A house like this is bought today, probably $2 million, $1.5 million. The Rebbe decided to stay there no matter what. And he succeeded. And he prevailed. This business of running away is a sickness. No running away. You stay and you make it right. What happened there this week? I'll tell you what happened there this week in 770. You know, in the parsha of this week, we read about the 10 plagues. What is the first plague? What was the first plague?
I don't remember. Was it the death of the firstborn? But
That was
now,
the 10th plague.
right, the first. So,
Even though
locusts.
no, that's one of the other plagues.
Pestilence. Well, that's locusts.
Another plague. What else? You remember, think about it.
First one.
What any other plague you remember?
Was it hail? Was
Hell. Yeah, it was one of the plagues.
Drought.
No, doubt was not a plague.
Drought was not. That's right. It was. I'm stumped.
Dumb, a blood, blood. It turned the water of the river, of the Nile River, into blood. That was the first one. Now, what's the message from it? Why blood is the first, was the first plague? Blood, what water is cold, right? The nature of the water is wet and cold. It represents coldness. You know, why in every tourist destination they show you water? The pictures are always water, a beach. It's relaxed, it's water, it's cold, it's nice. What's blood? Blood is hot. A hot-blooded person, right? Somebody has cold blood. When you say somebody is bad, you say it's a cold-blooded person. A hot-blooded person is somebody who's excited. You know, in Judaism, sometimes we do mitzvahs, but we do it with the water cold. You know, people tell me, yeah, Hanukkah, when the kids were home, it was exciting. We were eating latkes, playing with the dreidel, lighting the menorah overnight. Now, who has patience for it? I'm sitting with my wife, we are tired, I'm going to sleep. Pesach, yeah, with my kids were here. We had like long table with so many people, it was amazing. Now, me and my wife are sitting there reading the maror, a little haroset. Half hour, read a little matzah, we go to bed. We lost the excitement. The job of, if you want to get out of Egypt, of our personal Egypt, we have to turn the water into blood, the coldness into a warmth, into excitement, bring some blood into the mitzvah, some excitement into the mitzvah. That's what we need to do. That was the first plague. The second plague is, why it's so important to do mitzvahs with excitement, I'll tell you. Because every person has excitement. The question is, what he's using it for? Is he using it when he watches the next sports event? When the Browns play, or when the Hwaiz was, and there is another baseball game or basketball game, then he's not sitting half dead. He starts screaming on the screen and gets all excited and yells and screams. Unbelievable. I once had a class with a group. After there was a whole event in the class, after the class, they walked inside the house to watch the game. The transformation that I saw from the time that I was talking to the lady that walked into the room, it was in the summer. My class was outside. Then they walked into, was like the resurrection of the dead, nothing short of that. If I don't have the excitement for the mitzvah, I will have the excitement for something else. The second plague is frogs. Frogs are coming from the water. Frogs are most of the time are in the water. What happened with the frogs? Moses ate the frogs and they spread all over Egypt and they came even into the ovens. They made it all the way to the ovens and made the ovens cold. What's the idea? The oven is a hot thing, but sometimes as they eat, the excitement of the wrong place. Then the oven we have to make cold. The excitement to the sports we have to make a little cooler. The excitement to food we have to make a little colder. The excitement to a mitzvah we have to make it a little warmer. We have to turn the heat under the mitzvah and turn down the heat under the sin. When you do something wrong, I think in 770 the excitement was misguided a little bit. It was in the wrong place. Thank you.